Welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome, my friends, to another live installment of the award-winning Political Cesspool radio program. I am James Edwards, your host this evening. Joining me tonight in the studios of AM 1380 WLRM Radio is none other than Keith Alexander, as we broadcast to you this Saturday night, February 20th, from both WLRM and the affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network. And I think we are going to have a particularly strong program for you tonight. All of our shows are good, as you well know, but sometimes they're just a little bit better than others. We've got great guests tonight and I think exceptional content. And to help me shovel through that content here during tonight's first hour, Keith Alexander, as I just mentioned. And Keith, tonight as we kick the show off, I have to make a confession both to you and our listening audience. I think sometimes it's therapeutic for a man to come clean about some things. And if you'll indulge me, Keith, I would like to open up to you. Is that okay?
This sounds like a Tiger Woods moment. What's going on here?
Well, I was so inspired by Tiger, I felt obligated to air some of my own dirty laundry. I have to admit, I'm a big fan of the Maury Povich show.
Oh, no.
Here where I'm going with this, okay?
That's a good son of Israel. Go ahead.
Yeah, Maury slightly edges out Jerry Springer when it comes to my favorite television programs.
Your favorite Jewish television host.
Well,
there are many to choose from.
Maury's main shtick is to do these paternity tests on his show. I don't know if you've ever flipped through and seen him doing it, but he does it all the time, at least once a week. And I was watching him the other day, and he was doing paternity tests for some of these black women that came in trying to find out who their baby daddy is. And this one woman was on her 12th paternity test. That means she had to have 12 partners within a time frame that would have made them eligible candidates to be the father of her baby. Okay,
so a couple of days in, right?
Yeah, well, exactly, at least a couple of weeks. So her 12th test, Maury proclaimed, you know, the guy in question was not the father. That, you know, he always really embellishes it. You are not the father. And she went berserk and all that. And that's, like I said, that's Maury's main, you know, routine. But I was watching it the other day, Keith, and I found out something that even I wasn't aware of. And you know, I know quite a bit. The topic of the Maury show a couple of days ago was mothers were wanting Maury to help talk their kids, their 14-year-old daughters, out of having their second kid. It was, please help me talk my 14-year-old out of having another kid.
You can't make it up, can you?
No, but one of the things, this 14-year-old Indian girl there, well, we say Indian, the politically correct would call them Native Americans, and in her defense, she was saying she's ready to have her second kid because since she's an Indian and still lives on a reservation, the government sends her a check every month. I didn't know that, Keith. I honestly did not know. I knew they got the casinos and they get all kinds of special, you know, breaks and incentives, but I did not know, just for being a non-white so-called Native American, that they got tribute from our government every week, but they do. And anyway, the only thing that repulses me more, to set up the point of this story, the only thing that repulses me more, or makes me laugh more in a disgusting way, than Maury and some of these things we find out on his show, are people like Glenn Beck. And that's what we're here to talk about during this first segment. If you go to our website, the blog, Keith, as you can attest, has been absolutely on fire in the last few days at thepoliticalcesspool.org. I think we've done a really good job of getting some good content up there. And one of the things you'll find is Glenn Beck barking like a dog. Glenn Beck is a guy, a phony conservative, and the more imbecilic he acts, the more he mocks conservatism, the more conservatives love him, apparently. And if barking like a dog on his program repeatedly, and we've got the YouTube clip on the website if you want to check it out, if that isn't bad enough, Keith, tell him what you saw Glenn Beck talking about earlier this week and see if that can't really repulse our listenership in a Maury Povich type way.
Well, it's important for us to distinguish between ourselves and other people that call themselves conservatives in the mainstream media. People like Maury Povich, for example, and Jerry Springer and Howard Stern make no pretense of being conservative, but the elites that run our media, and you know who you are out there, they basically want to own both sides of each coin. So they want to also control conservatives, and they serve up for us this these phony conservatives, as you call them, like Glenn Beck, like Laura Ingraham, like Rush Limbaugh. And this week I was listening to Glenn Beck just to try to debunk what he was saying. And
see, I don't know what's worse, you listening to Beck or me watching Maury, but we'll leave that for another debate.
Well, you know, we both watch him for the same thing, to find out what the enemy is up to.
That's right.
And what Glenn Beck was talking about was that he was going to have a segment on his television show in the evening. Of course, his radio show program is in the morning. And it was going to be on, you know, what a real American president ought to be like, as opposed to Obama. And guess who the subject of that vignette was going to be?
Well, I already know because you told me, but tell everyone else.
Well, it's not Calvin Coolidge, Ronald Reagan, George Washington, Andrew Jackson, James K. Polk, or any of the real heroes of the American presidency. It was going to be Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln,
the first central statist, the one who wanted a Leviathan, all-encompassing government, and who crushed states' rights beneath his heel. He is the new hero of the neoconservatives, apparently, or at least one of them.
Yeah, well, and Glenn Beck also said, did he not, Keith, that Abraham Lincoln, in Beck's opinion, was the last president who truly understood the American Constitution?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, if you can believe that, if Glenn Beck is a conservative, and if he says that Abraham Lincoln understood the American Constitution, then the framers of the American Constitution, people like Jefferson and Madison, obviously did not, because they wrote in the Kentucky and the Virginia resolutions that the states had the right to secede. And, of course, Lincoln didn't believe that. He didn't want to believe it because he liked the situation that had developed in America since the end of the Era of Good Feelings in 1824, in which the South had been relegated to the status of a colony to the rest of America, where we produced raw materials and basically lost any right of self-determination,
any right of
self-government.
Lincoln was the first to endorse this total war policy, allowing Sherman to do that bloody march to the sea where he raped, murdered, pillaged, burned, you know, man, woman, and child and their homes all the way through Georgia to the coast. But he, according to Glenn Beck, was the last president who truly understood the American Constitution. I don't guess, Keith, we've had a legitimate president since Jefferson Davis. There have been some decent ones since then, maybe Taft. Reagan, yeah, he was okay, but, I mean, obviously he was a part of the game, too, with his stands on immigration and so on and so forth. But the point is, here's the point, just another example of what separates the political cesspool. A radio program who does stand up for the Constitution, who does stand up to defend America first, not only first, but second and third as well. But you got Glenn Beck, people who the establishment plant as posers of conservatism, and they are taking so many people astray. But it's the whole Republican Party, or as we were beginning to call them, the dead elephants.
Yeah, here's another thing that I want to bring up.
You know, they got that Lincoln, you know, the Republicans' big celebration is the big Lincoln Day dinner. But anyway, go ahead, Keith.
Yeah, the other thing is, Laura Ingraham, who's kind of the second string of the neocons, was confronted by a caller about Newt Gingrich, and this guy was blasting Newt Gingrich for being the phony conservative that he is, and Laura just could not wait to hit the dump button. You know, Newt Gingrich, of course, is the Republican answer to John Edwards, a guy that went out cheating on his wife as she was dying of cancer, and he's also the major sellout. He's a major face of the so-called 1994 Republican Revolution, where they captured control of the House of Representatives and the Senate. And, of course, it all came to nothing because the Republicans were under the leadership of phony conservatives ready to sell out the interests of true conservatives like Newt Gingrich. Then Rush Limbaugh, to put the cherry on top this past week, came out and said, that we haven't had a good Democratic president in this nation since John F. Kennedy. John F. Kennedy, the womanizing, skirt-chasing, liberal maniac who brought the whole civil rights movement down on us, which was, you know, nothing but, you know, it's destroyed the school system, it's destroyed our economy. It is, you know, it was, you know, the beginning of the end. In fact, we point to the May 17, 1954 decision in Brown versus Board of Education.
Keith, hold the thought,
everything
Keith.
Started to go south.
Hold that thought. We're going to pick it up right there when the cesspool returns. We're just getting started, ladies and gentlemen. We're back right after this.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Back, my friends. James Edwards and Keith Alexander here with you for tonight's first hour of the Political Cesspool radio program. What we were bringing to your attention during the first hour, as if you needed another example, is just one thing that was brought to our attention, or a couple of things, actually, that were brought to our attention over the course of the past week in listening to people like Glenn Beck and Laura Ingraham and Rush Limbaugh, just more examples of what separates our program as the genuine article of American paleoconservatism versus the voices of the mainstream or so-called respectable conservative movement. And we were bringing up the fact of Glenn Beck praising Abraham Lincoln, Laura Ingraham defending Newt Gingrich, Rush Limbaugh saying John F. Kennedy really had it right. And Keith, one of our good friends here in Memphis has a perfectly appropriate analogy for something like this, with the decon analogy, as he calls it. Explain to the audience what that is.
Well, decon, of course, is a famous and very effective and deadly rat poison. And if you look at its ingredients, the active ingredients, in other words, the only part of it that is actually poisonous is like 2 or 3 hundredths of 1%. So in other words, most of the decon won't hurt you, the rat, or anyone else. It's that small amount of poison in it that makes it so deadly. Well, this is the plan of the elites. There, you know, you may have wondered before why a radio program like ours isn't competing on the major airwaves with Rush Limbaugh or Michael Savage or Laura Ingraham or Bill O'Reilly or Glenn Beck. The reason is they want to keep the Indians on the reservation, the Indians being people like you, me, and James, and everyone else that thinks for themselves. They don't want people to know true conservatism. They want to have a variety of different false conservatisms floating out there with decon in them. In other words, a bit of error. And that bit of error, which differs, quite frankly, from one host to another on the conservative end of the spectrum, is what keeps conservatism fractured, confused, and consequently ineffective. That's the way that the elites like it. They want people to think that they have access to conservative thought. They want people to think that we have freedom of speech and expression in America, when actually they're controlling the whole thing to make sure that conservatism can never get any traction and never seriously challenge the hegemony of liberalism in modern American society.
Well, when you're listening to a voice of the left, like Jean Garofalo or Keith Olbermann, you're going to reject as, and I hate to use the word conservative because it's been so watered down, but you know what I'm talking about, a true paleoconservative. You listen to Olbermann and Garofalo, and you're going to reject everything they say, rightfully so. But you listen to someone like Beck or Hannity or Limbaugh, and they will put just enough truth in there to make it digestible. In fact, a lot of things that they say are things that we could agree with, but of course not on the most sensitive of issues. So I would say perhaps even 50% of their program would be digestible, but the other stuff is the stuff that you eat with it, and that's the kind of stuff that kills you. None of these guys, Hannity, Limbaugh, Beck, etc., are going to stand up for the American Renaissance Conference, for instance. I'm sure most of our listeners are aware that the American Renaissance Conference, which is American Renaissance itself, is a magazine, a scientific magazine edited by Jared Taylor, who has been on this program numerous times over the year. They have a biannual conference. They've been doing so since 1994. And this year, a group of apparently leftist terrorists have been phoning in threats to each hotel. Four hotels pulled the rug out from Jared Taylor, and the final one was the final straw, as a matter of fact, and Jared had to cancel the conference completely. The hotels canceled the conference because these leftist thugs were calling in death threats. And to that, let me say this. My good friend Sam Dixon, and I wrote this today in an email, has often noted that whites in America are like abused children. The more whites are mistreated and abused by those in authority, the tighter we cling to them. That's easy to see why a small child clings to abusive parents. In his limited understanding of the world around him, his parents are everything. He'll do his best to try to please them, to comfort them, and to conform to the twisted world those parents created for him. But why grown men and women in this country do the same is even harder to explain. But the more their freedoms and rights are trampled upon, the harder they wave that American flag. And again, take the American Renaissance Conference as an example. It was canceled, as I said, after four or five hotels turned them away. Hotel employees received death threats and who knows what other kind of pressure. But I'm sure if you wandered around the big CPAC conference this week asking the respectable conservatives manning those tables about the Amarin cancellation, they would all applaud the fact that Amarin was snuffed out. And even if they were stout enough to repeat the tired platitude, "I might not like what you have to say, but I agree with your right to say it," or "I will defend your right to say it," it's not very likely that they would draw the obvious conclusion. And what is the obvious conclusion that we have to draw from the Amarin experience? Well, there are only two choices, Keith, and then I'll turn it back over to you. One is that the billions of dollars spent on so-called homeland security have been poured down that rat hole. If we can't stop a bunch of creeps from the local yeshiva from repeatedly calling in death threats to major hotels all around our capital city over a period of several weeks, then who are we kidding? But the second choice is that the establishment actually supports these stooges and has no intention of stopping them. They are doing their master's bidding. Now, again, going back to the topic we were discussing during the first segment, do you think you'll hear any of this discussed, these threats of violence, which I, in my opinion, are true terrorist threats against hotels and against people like Jared? Do you think you're going to hear that discussed at CPAC or by Rush or by Hannity or Beck? Or by your local Tea Party or the Republican Party. Now, that's the sort of thing you're only going to get on this radio program, Keith.
Yeah, what we have when we compare CPAC with Amarin is that there are basically two topics that the elites in charge of the media will not allow to be discussed, and those are issues touching on race or touching on Jewish power and influence, because when you do that, you're digging too close to where the bodies are buried, and there that you're getting too near the hot button issues, which will cause the scales to fall from the eyes of the public to find out what's really happening to them, to figure it out, and to take appropriate countermeasures. Now, they don't want those things discussed. For example, Denise D'Souza, the famous neocon, was on Phyllis Schlafly's show radio program 2 weeks ago. I called in and confronted him about the comments he made about Sam Francis, the famous paleoconservative commentator that caused him to lose his job at the Washington Times and to lose a position that he was before, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, and basically his career went down the tubes. If they can do it with so much as a little deft cut of the scalpel like Denise D'Souza did, well, then they're happy to do that. But on the other hand, they can't shut up groups like the Political Cesspool or the Amarin Conference with subtle measures. So they pull out all the artillery. They'll use death threats. And I'm sure that if it got down to it, they would follow through on those types of threats if that was what was necessary to keep this, you know, true conservative viewpoint from finding expression in the mainstream. They just do not want these issues discussed, and they're going to do whatever it takes to censor the actual transmission of true conservative thought and analysis.
Well, Keith, of course you're right. We're going to talk more about the American Renaissance saga and this, I guess it was a couple of months long chain of events that led up to the first ever cancellation of the American Renaissance Conference simply because they couldn't find a venue to host them. They couldn't rent a hotel room. They couldn't freely assemble to exercise their God-given First Amendment. So we're going to talk more about that next week in more detail when we have more time. But for right now, we got to take a break, and we'll be back with more right after this. Stay tuned, everybody.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
It's a very special year for me because 10 years ago this month, 10 years ago, February of 2000, I got involved with the Pat Buchanan campaign for president, his third and final campaign for the presidency, and obviously, that was a road that I would take that would change my life forever. That broken road of political activism ultimately led me to this radio program. And I'm very proud of this program for a number of reasons, not the least of which all that we've accomplished and the number of good friends that we've amassed, but the fact that I get to host it, and even better than that, I created it. And it's exciting to be able to serve this cause, a cause that is much greater than myself in the capacity that I do. But I say all that to say this. I got my start working for a third party 10 years ago. And in the second hour of tonight's broadcast, you're going to hear from Bill Johnson, who is the chairman of the American Third Position. This is a party that I am taking an active role in, and we're going to hear all about it for the first time tonight in depth and detail when Chairman Bill Johnson of the American Third Position joins us in just a few minutes' time. So that being said, and I'll tell you, it really makes you feel good to go out there and work for something as glorious as what this movement is to me. And you can play a role on that team as well. It just makes you feel good inside to do something for something righteous. And if you want to support this movement, if you want to support this radio program, obviously you know how to do that. Just go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. I don't need to remind you that we are a totally listener-supported broadcast entity. We don't have corporate sponsorships, although we are very grateful for the businesses that do sponsor us, but primarily we are a listener-supported program. Without your financial considerations, this program would cease to exist, and after 6 years of going strong, we don't want to have to do that, and you can make sure that that never happens, that we will be here for another 6 years, 16 years even. We'll be here forever, as long as there's still life in us, as long as God doesn't call us home. You can donate to us, though, at thepoliticalcesspool.org, safely and securely with your credit card, thepoliticalcesspool.org. But again, Keith, we were talking about some issues earlier in the program. These are unpleasant issues, the issues we have to deal with on this program. It is much easier to stand in line and wait to get a picture with Sarah Palin than it is to come to the realization that the Republican parties and mainstream conservatism is not on your side. In fact, they are probably more dangerous to you than the radical left. And this is the reason this show exists.
Well, what we saw with the Ameren conference and with Denise D'Souza's political hatchet job or on Sam Francis back in 1994, and even Rush Limbaugh, who apparently is disqualified from having an ownership interest in an NFL team because of his mildly conservative stances on various public issues. Basically, conservatism isn't going to be tolerated, and particularly full-body conservatism. Now, we're talking about the Ameren conference, and Ameren as a group and its head, Jared Taylor in particular, are assiduously avoid any type of commentary or criticism of Jewish power and influence. In fact, the easiest way to get banished from the blog board over there is to say anything touching on that subject. But as we've said, apparently Amran is learning just like Rush Limbaugh did, that you can pull as many punches as you want in this issue, and you still aren't going to get a pass from the cabal of elites that runs the American media. They are going to come after you hammer and tongs at the first opportunity, so consequently we here at the Cesspool never hold back. We're going to pursue the truth, and we never pull our punches.
Well, that's right. And Rush Limbaugh, truly, folks, is politically correct. I know he's a blowhard, and he talks a good game on some issues. And let's, you know, I'll be honest, there are a lot of issues with Rush that I find myself in agreement on, but not on the most sensitive ones. He would not be on Clear Channel in every major American market if he was truly challenging the powers that be. You have to know that. But that's why this show is so special. But even Rush, with all of his mainstream credentials, he hasn't done enough to placate the ruling elite, as we saw in his failed bid to buy the St. Louis Rams. In fact, according to a black columnist that Keith and I read over the course of this week in preparation for today's interview, we're not even close to that utopian post-racial America. We found another so-called journalist, and we posted this on the blog. Again, most everything we talk about on this program, or everything that we provide commentary for on this program, you can read in detail with corroborating links and references on our blog. We like to be detailed and thorough. So this article we're about to lay out for you, you can read more about it at thepoliticalcesspool.org. But another black journalist was complaining about the horrible racism that still exists in a country that elected a black president. The title of his article was "Post-Racial America? Not Even Close." That's the title of the rant. And you need to go to the website, our website, to get a load of the evidence, and I use that word loosely, of the racism that he presents. It's trivial and silly stuff, but it doesn't matter how much whites grovel to blacks. They're still white, so therefore they must be racist. To blacks, the word racist simply means a white person. If you don't believe that, go to my website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Watch my very first CNN appearance when I debated two people by the names of Roland Martin and Molly Secours. Molly Secours said on national television that all whites are born racist. And if you work really hard at it over the course of your lifetime, you will die a little less racist than you were born, but you can't truly, totally atone. She said that on CNN. And you see what I got to put up with, ladies and gentlemen? Well, this is the mindset. We're not even close. No matter what we do, we're never going to be able to do enough. So why not just quit trying to placate people and stand up for what's right? Stand up for our family. Stand up for our country. Stand up for our culture, our identity.
I'm not talking about going
out and discriminating against anyone and treating people poorly, but why not treat ourselves decently? That's the point.
Well, James, if you want to know how extreme it is, if you read this article that you're talking about by a guy named Michael Arsenault.
And it was a big article, Keith, because it was front page news on
AOL. News, right.
AOL everywhere, yeah.
Well, guess who he points to as examples of bigoted white people who have this inherent bigotry? He's not pointing to any members of the Ku Klux Klan. He's not pointing to, anybody that you would identify as somebody who's a strong advocate of whites. He's pointing to, of all people, Chris Matthews and Keith Olbermann. they are quoted as being repositories of this evil sense of white privilege that shows that we're not in post-racial America.
Keith, well, you make my point for me.
Let me just follow up on this.
I got to get going on this. Keep going.
William Raspberry, the famous black columnist, has said before that it is never, ever legitimate for white people to coalesce, to put their power together, and to lobby for their own interests. We're the only group that is denied that right. And, what they're trying to do is they are intent upon placing rules and restrictions on white people that will make them helpless for being dispossessed. In fact, liberalism, I've said this before, liberalism, if you want a little nugget of a definition for it, it is a strategy and a scheme to deny white people their rightful place in American society. That's what's behind the whole thing, and, you know, the blacks, the Hispanics, the colored people, quote unquote, of the world, are never going to give up on trying to excoriate whites. And because under cultural Marxism, we're the great class enemy of everyone else. We've oppressed everyone else. And there's so much money and so much treasure to be obtained from white people
from
by continuing
us.
To have this type of you know, system, that they're not about to give that up. They're not going to, you know, cut off their own gravy train.
Well, it's extortion is what it is. This whole system of white guilt that they try to instill in us every day. Well, you know, do you know how obnoxious Keith Olbermann and Chris Matthews are? Do you know how filled of self-hate that they are? And yet even they cannot do enough to atone. I mean, they hate white people, okay?
I was reading an article by Edmund Connolly in the Occidental Observer, and he was talking about, in the Occidental Quarterly, about racial role reversals in movie, and he said that because whites are still a majority of the people in America, you can't demonize all whites without losing white support. So consequently, they have to portray what he calls righteous whites that will allow some part of the white population to identify with them and buy into the liberal zeitgeist or outlook. And to be a righteous white, you always have to do one thing, and that is sell out other whites, like the prosecutor in A Time to Kill or in Mississippi Burning, for example. That's what you have to do to atone.
And even then, you're not truly
atoned.
Apparently
even Chris Matthews and Keith Olbermann don't qualify.
We'll be back.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, Keith and I were talking about this absolutely wretched article that appeared on AOL News this week where this black journalist was talking about that we're not even close to post-racial America, and people that he used as examples of inherent racism were Chris Matthews and Keith Olbermann, for God's sake. That shows how radical this guy is. But unfortunately, AOL didn't see that as an extremist bit of commentary, Keith. They thought it was perfectly acceptable and mainstream, you know, and it was sent out on the AP and everything else. So this is what we're up against, ladies and gentlemen. And, you know, what gets me is that at the expense of our own children and our own culture, we continue to try to placate these malcontents. And let me repeat that I am not suggesting that we go out there and treat other people poorly or badly or do them wrong in any way. But what I'm saying is, you know, why hurt yourself? You know, it's like giving a bratty child that what he's asking for. I mean, you never can appease. There's no appeasement with people like this columnist we're talking about, and unfortunately, I believe that's the kind of behavioral pattern that exists in a great number of these so-called minorities. But nevertheless, we see examples of white guilt manifesting itself every day in places where you would think we would have a little bit more sense, places like right here in Memphis, Macon Road Baptist School. Macon Road Baptist School is a very small Baptist church school. It goes all the way up to 12th grade, but enrollment isn't that big compared to some of the other major private schools here in Memphis, like the one I went to, Briarcrest, for example. Nevertheless, Macon Road has a handful of black kids in the school, and somehow one of these basketball players managed to be voted in as the homecoming king. Now, you can ask yourself the rhetorical question, if 5 or 6 white kids went to an all-black school, would any of them be elected to anything other than a school punching bag? But Keith, provide a little more analysis on the situation at Macon Road, because Macon Road is just one of thousands of examples that you'll find from coast to coast of this white guilt, people trying to justify their... What are they trying to do here, Keith? You summed it up great at lunch today.
Yeah, well, let me just point out the absurdity of all of this. what do Keith Olbermann, Chris Matthews, and the Grand Kleagle of the Ku Klux Klan have in common? Well, they're all white, so they're all racist. As you said before, racist has become a synonym for white in the jargon of the mainstream media and of our governing elite. Now, at Macon Road Baptist School, Macon Road Baptist School was what the liberals mocked as a segregation academy. It came into existence in the early to mid-1970s in response to the Plan Z busing order that struck and affected all Memphis public schools, where suddenly a white parent would wake up one morning, get a letter from the school board saying that your daughter has now been transferred to this, you know, ghetto school, and have her pick up the bus next week at 8 in the morning or 7:15 in the morning. And, of course, parents who love their children made sure that they didn't send their children into a situation where, one, they weren't going to learn, and, two, where it was going to be dangerous, a la the genesis of schools like Macon Road Baptist or Briarcrest Baptist, where you attended. You know, it's amazing how many private schools came into being at that same time. Well, what this shows to me is it's a perfect example of the internalization of white guilt. Even kids at this school who are not privileged kids, their parents aren't wealthy for the most part, they have bought into this white guilt thing. They believe, just like people at the Tea Parties, people like there's a guy, Mark Skoda, in Memphis, who's part of the Memphis Tea Party movement, they think, like the left, like Keith Olbermann, like Chris Matthews, when they criticize the Tea Party movement, they say, the only, here's proof positive that this is a racist organization. Where are the blacks? Where are the Hispanics? In other words, to get validation, your ideas are illegitimate and beyond the pale, and no civilized person should even give you a hearing unless your organization is fronted by a black person, a Hispanic person, or whatever. And, of course, this Mark Skoda fella is busy promoting black people in all of these political races. He's got one named Charlotte Bergman running for Congress against Steve Cohen and Willie Harrington, the two left-wing Democratic candidates, one named Les Phillips in Alabama and one named Angela McKinney in Mississippi, all running for Congress. See, this has gone filtered all the way down to these kids, where they feel they've got to put a black face on their school to somehow atone for this horrible guilt, you know, ancestral guilt that they suffer. And, of course, this is absurd. And it just shows you that, you know, that there's, and as the experiences, for example, that we're talking about with Chris Matthews and Keith Olbermann, you can't be liberal enough to get atonement. So quite frankly, it's time for white people and for the majority of people in America to stop playing this game.
Well, as I said earlier in the program, Keith, I liken it to an abused child.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like Stockholm syndrome.
We're being abused. Exactly. Yeah, they're hostages even. We're being abused by the media. We're being abused by our government. We're being abused by academia. And we're trying everything we can to satisfy our masters here at our own expense. And that's how I think that's how mentally debilitated whites in America have become. That you know, no other race, creed, or culture would put up with this sort of nonsense, and nor should they be asked to. If I have no right to go to the Sudan and, you know, impose my culture on them at the point of a bayonet, first of all, I wouldn't want to go to the Sudan. But even if I did, I wouldn't expect them to
embrace me.
Become a republic. I wouldn't expect them to become Christian. I wouldn't expect them, just because I'm there on their land, that they're going to do everything I want to do. But that's exactly, you know, that's what you know, Professor Bob Whitaker has always said. China can be for the Chinese, Mexico can be for the Mexicans, but white nations must be for everyone. We're not entitled to have any sort of,
and
of course, cultural
or
racial identity.
An example of that is Israel can be for Jews, but Christian nations in Europe and America and Australia and whatnot cannot be for white Christians.
Well, and this is why, you know, of course, and as we've talked about many times on this program, Israel is an apartheid state. They have an absolutely legally segregated society. You know, I'm not for many laws. I'm not an anarchist. I'm not even necessarily a libertarian in the extreme sense of it all, but I am for the least amount of government as possible. And because of that, you know, I've gone on CNN and I thought gave a very eloquent defense of the tenets of self-segregation. I believe in this country that people ought to have the right to associate with whomever they want. And one of my sparring partners on CNN, as I mentioned, was Roland Martin. And
who, of course, censored you off of the thing. He more or less suggested that you were so extreme that they just couldn't have you on, and it was basically because you were winning all the debates.
Well, and people, as I said, can go and watch the YouTube footage of some of those appearances at thepoliticalcesspool.org. But see, Roland Martin, another guy, you know, he's still on CNN all the time, but he has wrote a column recently saying Obama isn't doing nearly enough to force his viewpoint on the American people. He needs to, and I quote, go gangsta, G-A-N-G-S-T-A. That's what this so-called commentator said. He needs to go gangsta on the Congress and force, you know, his will, just as the Republicans do, as if the Republicans do that. I mean, obviously the Republicans, maybe they do,
they
certainly don't force the American people's will.
What the Republicans do is they go cash for milk toast. They concede every point they possibly can, and it never gains them anything except more and more abuse, to the point that you can add to the panoply or the galaxy of racists in America, Keith Olbermann and Chris Matthews, those two anti-black bigots. Now, that just shows you how absurd it is.
Don't
get caught up in that game.
That's why people need to support the few organizations that are out there. The American Third Position, which we're about to hear about, the Council of Conservative Citizens, the Occidental Quarterly, European Americans United, Western Voices World News, League of American Patriots. There are a few, and there's some more on our website. But, of course, this radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org, and the Liberty News Radio Network, which still believes in that American relic known as freedom of speech. Folks, you've got to support the people who are standing here. We do this show at our own peril. Getting death threats is just something that comes with the job here. But, you know, we're doing this because we want to provide a voice. We want to be the voice of the American right, and you facilitated us in that quest. And there's still a lot of work left to be done. As Robert Frost said, we have promises to keep and miles to go before we sleep. And if you want to make sure that we can fulfill the potential of this radio program, I still think as much good as we've done, we can do that much more. But we need your support in order to do it. You can make a donation tonight with your credit card safely and securely and quickly, even better, at thepoliticalcesspool.org. If you like the work and mission of this program, we would appreciate for you to play your role on this team. We got to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
Right after these messages.
Harv leaped to his feet and says, "Something's got a hold on me." The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.